Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. If you have in your household preschool children, you'll want to be paying attention to the topic today. And there may be others of you, of course, who are the grandparents and friends of those with preschool children. Most of the Democratic candidates for the presidential nomination in 2008 believe that children beginning at age 3 or 4 should be in universal preschool programs through the public schools. Now, the big debate about this seems to be about funding. And our topic of conversation today is not really about the Democratic candidates, and it's not really about funding. It's about where our children need to be educated. And it's about what it would mean to lower the institutionalized context of education for children below where it was years ago at the first grade to where it has been more recently in kindergarten down to 4-year-olds and 3-year-olds. You see, I think we're coming very, very close to, in this kind of proposal, very, very close to the idea that children will be raised in an institutional setting, just called preschool programs. And, of course, there's a lot of paranoia about this, a lot of scare language about our children getting further and further behind. Well, how in the world is a 3-year-old behind in getting into kindergarten and all the rest? The phone number is going to be 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I want us to talk about the principle at stake here. I want us to talk about the issue related to our understanding of children that's at stake here. Let's let others worry about the money. Let's talk about whether it should happen in the first place. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. First, to review some issues in the news. At my website, overnight, I posted an article on church planting movements and the Great Commission. Now, this is one of the big developments in Christian life, especially in the evangelical side, over the last, 20 years or so, especially the last 10 years, and even in the last 5 years, a big acceleration. An awful lot of young pastors are really more interested in starting new churches than in going to serve as the leaders of existing churches. And you also have a new missiological approach suggesting that the way to reach America, to evangelize North America, is through establishing new churches. Let me give you the arguments in favor of this. Number one, an awful lot of existing churches aren't where the lost people are, by and large. You have entire subcultures in America that are unreached by existing churches. The second argument to be made here is that as churches age, they, in the main, and this is a generalization, but in the main, they become less evangelistic, and their growth begins to slow. The third argument to be made here is that new churches tend to be very high adult conversion churches. And that, again, is very, very important. So there is a good argument about establishing new churches. It is very clearly an apostolic model. It's based in the New Testament. That's exactly what you see in the book of Acts. So this rise of a church planting movement is very much to be celebrated. There isn't always, though, another side of the coin. And the other side of the coin, and this is very important to me as a seminary president, is that we have existing churches that desperately need men to be pastors. And they need people to come, men to come to serve as pastors who will preach the word and lead them towards a revitalization of their ministry. You know, there are some concerns about a lot of these new churches. There are many of them in different kinds of forms, different movements, and we could trace all of that sometime on this program. But the interesting thing is that many of them are established in the name of diversity. And, you know, there's a clear indictment there. Far too many of our churches, existing established churches, are lacking in diversity. And they do not look like places where some different people and subcultures of unreached peoples in the United States are likely to go. But my warning is this. A church of tattooed 20-somethings can be just as lacking in diversity as an existing church of elderly people in suburbia. You can't just say that we're going to do something new and it's going to be diverse. The church is to show the diversity of God's kingdom, but it needs to do so in a way that's natural to the community. So the bottom line in all this is that there's much to celebrate in this rise of the church planting movement, and the planting of new churches is clearly a New Testament model that we should recognize and celebrate, and this energy toward reaching an awful lot of people in America who are not yet reached, and in North America we have increasing numbers who are not yet reached. with the gospel, this is good news. But it isn't going to replace the existing church, and the existing church can learn from the new church plant, and the new churches can also learn from the existing churches as well. Both need each other. And beyond that, we eventually have to get down to the place that we recognize that these new churches and the church planting movement is not going to supplant the way churches have always grown in terms of real growth, and that's through sharing the gospel with lost people and having them come to a saving knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ and then become members of the church. And that's also the apostolic model going all the way back to the New Testament. There are other issues in the news as well. Yesterday we were covering so many of the events related to the disappointment held by the Anglican Communion and by conservatives in the Episcopal Church USA over what took place in New Orleans with the meeting of the Episcopal bishops responding to the Anglican Communion and the Anglican primates. Now there is a news release out from the Common Cause Partnership Movement, and yesterday we had a guest on the program talking about this, indicating that these are now taking first steps towards a new structure. Point two of their release says, "We declare clearly that we are taking this as a first step in the formation of the separate ecclesiastical structure in North America called for at Kigali in September 2006. Number eight, it says, "We ask our chairman to inform the primates of the Anglican Communion of these commitments in the hope that our emerging common life will commend us to them as full partners." In other words, this is the declaration of what they intend to be a new Anglican church in North America. And they are hoping that this will be recognized by the Anglican Communion. We'll be watching this as well. Parents, we're going to be talking about preschoolers today, but there is a news report coming out from Great Britain indicating that a parliament committee there, and this is reflected in the General Medical Council, that's the council that deals with medical ethics in Great Britain, is ruling that children age 13 who consult a doctor for advice about contraception, abortion, or sexually transmitted diseases are entitled to be treated without the knowledge of their parents. Now, you heard that right. Children 13 and older can receive medical advice and medical treatment, including abortion, treatment for sexually transmitted diseases, and information about contraception without the knowledge of their parents. Let me read to you here from the story published in today's edition of The Independent by Jeremy Lawrence. It says, in its first guidance on the treatment of children up to age 18, the General Medical Council says children of 12 or under are presumed in law not to be capable of giving consent, and doctors should normally disclose details of any sexual activity involving them to a third party. But where a child is over 13 and efforts to persuade them to tell their parents fail, advice or treatment should be offered in confidence unless there are reasons to believe the sexual relationship is abusive or seriously harmful. Folks, that's the kind of world we're living in now. Our worldview of autonomous individualism is now filtering down to autonomous individuals who are 13. And this is in Great Britain, but very similar trends are present in the United States as well. In South Florida, the transgender issue is catching a lot of attention, even as in Washington just this week, the House of Representatives stripped a transgendered inclusion from some anti-discrimination legislation. In South Florida, the Sun Sentinel, which is the newspaper in Fort Lauderdale, indicates that this is quickly becoming an issue in that part of the country. This is an article by Patty Pinsa from the Florida Sun Sentinel. It reads, transgender is quietly becoming a protected class in South Florida as cities vote to prohibit discrimination against a group that faces tremendous challenges fitting in. Palm Beach and Broward counties may extend the protection next, which could leave the broadest imprint by affording civil rights to people for their gender identity or expression. The movement accelerated with the March firing of Largo City Manager Susan Stanton, who transitioned from male to female this year. Now, again, we're talking here about something that is new to human civilization. This very idea that gender is nothing more than a social construct, and it's a personal choice. And remember, this isn't just talking about persons who have had a transgendered surgery, who have had a sexual transition surgery. This is about people who are asking to be recognized, demanding to have civil rights just on the basis of what is called their gender expression, which means it could be one thing one day and another thing another day. And you're looking here at a redefinition of human sexuality, in fact, a redefinition in many ways of what it means to be human. And now this is coming with calls for protection in the law and in civil rights. As you know, Europe has been experiencing a falling birth rate, and virtually all European countries, especially in Western and Northern Europe, are now faced with a declining population because of plummeting birth rates. In Germany, There was the belief that this had been turned around, especially in certain cases, and yet it turns out that the statistics were false, and there is still the decline in babies. The interesting thing is, it turns out that just paying people to have babies doesn't work. You see, I think that's because you have a worldview crisis that can't be handled with money. If people don't want children, if they're not willing to sacrifice for children, giving them a bonus for having them is hardly going to solve the problem. We're going to be back to talk about whether our preschoolers should be educated in institutional settings as a matter of universal policy. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The idea of universal preschool for America's children is beginning to become a major focus of the 2008 presidential election. And the Democratic cycle right now, it's basically being discussed among the leading candidates who all have their proposals about how this should take place. Hillary Rodham Clinton, the senator from New York, is suggesting a $10 billion proposal that would add a new grade onto the front end of the K-12 system. This is described in a recent article by John J. Miller entitled Preschool for All. This idea of universal preschool is catching on. You have the Pew Charitable Trusts and a number of different foundations. You have a group by the name of Pre-K Now. Its executive director is Libby Doggett. She says, we expect that all of the presidential candidates will be talking about it. It is the idea that the state should offer universal preschool for children beginning at 4 or at 3. In Illinois, Governor Rod Blagojevich wants public preschool not only for 4-year-olds, but for 3-year-olds as well. Now, this becomes really, really interesting. Let me read to you from Mr. Miller's article. He writes, a generation ago, only a small minority of kids went to preschool. In 1965, just 5% of 3-year-olds and 16% of 4-year-olds attended. Since then, preschool has become a booming business. Nowadays, more than 40% of 3-year-olds and more than 2/3 of 4-year-olds are enrolled, according to federal statistics. Although public programs such as Head Start have encouraged this trend, the sector is dominated by private actors, parents who pay out of pocket, YMCAs and churches that run preschools in their basements, and for-profit centers that hope to meet a growing demand. And it mentions that because there is a profit motive, there are many who are hoping that, indeed, this will become a universal reality. Mr. Miller argues that, for the most part, universal preschool is an expensive solution to a problem that doesn't exist. And yet the problem he's looking at here is educational. He's talking about the fact that there are people who are worried that children are falling behind, and thus they need to be in school earlier in order to learn, that they be ready for kindergarten. Imagine that. You know, you used to go to elementary school to be ready for high school. You used to go to middle school to get ready for high school, middle school being a later development, junior high school. Then you used to go to kindergarten to get ready for the first grade. Now you're supposed to go to preschool as a 4-year-old to get ready for kindergarten. And in Illinois, Governor Blagojevich wants you to start at 3, so you're ready to go to 4. You know, you have to wonder where this ends. Let me tell you that in almost every utopian vision, there is the idea that children will be removed from parents as the primary influences and educators. This is true of Plato's utopia. This is true of the Israeli kibbutz. This is true of Marxism and communism. The idea is true of Rousseau in terms of his famous utopian understanding of education. What you do is you take the child away from the parents. Why? Because the parents are going to be marked by particular prejudices and particular ideas. And if you're going to build a utopian civilization, you want to get children away from those parents, away from the influence of those parents, away from the teaching of those parents, away from the discipline of those parents, and you want to get them into institutionalized settings where they can all have the same experience. And you basically have a factory approach to educating children. And I find this very frightening. I think it's the kind of thing intelligent Christians ought to talk about. I hope you'll join me in this conversation today. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. It tells us a great deal about our country that more and more children are in these programs, some of them of necessity. If you have both parents working or you have a single parent home where the single parent is working, in many cases, children are in these programs. And that's not primarily what our discussion's about today. Our discussion today is about the fact that there are wealthy foundations and political candidates and governors and states that believe your child ought to be in universal preschool, even if you have them at home with you now. That's the radical part of this proposal, is that children are better off being put in a preschool program than being home with mom and being home with the family. And you have this educational kind of angst going on, this educational anxiety. Our children are falling behind. Well, I think there's something wrong with the civilization, with a nation or culture that thinks they're falling behind at 3 and falling behind at 4. I think that is downloading adult anxieties and adult failures onto children, who, after all, are children. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Plato, in his Utopia, believed that children should be taken away from parents at a very young age. You have the same kind of thing in, of course, not the utopian works, but what are called the dystopian works, the scary works of an apocalyptic future. You know, Brave New World in 1984, very similar kinds of proposals. In Brave New World, of course, you've got babies being born in hatcheries and being raised in just that kind of setting. And the idea of this is very, very clear. The mentality behind this is very, very clear. And that is that children will do better, though, apart from their parents and in an institutionalized setting. Let's go to Raymond calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Raymond.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I think that it's partly the parents' fault that we even need to step up and have programs like this started earlier and things like that. So many parents nowadays don't take the initiative to, actually teach their children and things, nowadays. I mean, you know, you do have homeschooling and things like that, but I mean, when it comes right down to it, they're just not taking the initiatives like they used to. You know, parents don't read to their kids like they used to. They stick them in front of a TV all day. You know, it's like, so programs like this are necessary, I think.
Well, let's talk about that for just a minute, Raymond. Number one, what kind of education do you think a 3-year-old should have? Now, about parents reading to kids, boy, you're singing my song there. That's absolutely necessary. And for the child's development. But do you really think it's going to help to put them in an institutionalized setting at age 3?
Definitely. I think that a child in the environment of other children is better than just sitting there by themselves, you know, at their house. You know, it's, I mean, like I have a 1-year-old that's in a program that only, he goes one day a week, you know, but just being around the children, you know, just being around children, I think, helps him to, you know, helps him move along himself. You know, I think it's easier for him to relate.
All right. Well, appreciate your point of view, Raymond. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Cortez, Colorado, where Fran's online. Go ahead, Fran.
Yes. Is it all right to leave my radio on?
Well, just turn it down while you're talking to me, okay?
Very good. I will do that. I just wanted to comment concerning the early daycare, the hype that's being portrayed, that is the way to manage young children. To me, the bottom line is the minute you get government involved, that is an initial step toward brainwashing children, potentially to any agenda that is on the plate of the federal government at that time. And if it's an extremely liberal standing that is contraindicated by conservative people, then it's just too bad. It's so easy to brainwash young children, and that's, to me, the first step if they're not only promoting it but going to make it as if it's necessary and mandatory. That could be a huge problem. I would certainly be against that.
Well, Fran, I appreciate your passion, and I also appreciate your point. And as evidence for what you're talking about, you can just go to places like Lexington, Massachusetts, and elsewhere, where in the news of Minneapolis, Minnesota, not long ago, where you have parents who are outraged at the fact that their children were given materials or read materials, in the case of kindergarten students, had stories read to them about same-sex parents and all the rest and about how normal this is. And that is a social teaching, a moral teaching. And you can understand, if that's your agenda, why you might think it would be better to have children outside the influence of parents who would feel otherwise. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. The whole question here is where children are most appropriately cared for. Is it in the home or in the school at these very early ages? 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with your calls.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Some presidential candidates this year, especially those on the Democratic side, are proposing a big expenditure for a new program to offer universal preschool education to young children. Hillary Rodham Clinton, the senator from New York, is suggesting a $10 billion proposal. It would add a new grade onto the front of K-12. And she says there's a lot of evidence that this saves money over the long run. She said this on the Today Show. You have John J. Miller in his new article, Preschool for All, writing that the supporters of universal preschool worry that kindergarten comes too late and believe that shunting children into government-run nursery schools around the time that they're potty training is a key to success in life. I am seriously doubtful of this. Not only that, I'm very concerned about this. This follows the kind of utopian reasoning of a fallen world that suggests that what you need to do is to get children away from parents and institutionalize them in educational settings, or educate them in institutional settings during even these very, very young years of life. You're talking about three-year-olds and four-year-olds in these proposals. And four-year-old is universal as the proposal here, because kindergarten's already five. And in Illinois, for instance, you have Governor Rob Blagojevich suggesting that public preschool should begin for three-year-olds in his state. Elliot Spitzer, the governor of New York, is also promising universal preschool by the year 2011. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. While the candidates are arguing about the particulars and the money, and while the educators are arguing about whether this helps or harms the educational prospects of children, I think the particular issue here for Christians is what this means in terms of our parental responsibility. And I'll tell you that I am just frightened, and I can't think of a more appropriate word than that, by the prospect of having children away from the influence of parents, the primary influence of parents, the solitary influence of parents on many issues, and putting them in institutional settings. That is, to me, a very, very scary prospect. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Roosevelt, Utah, where James is on the line, listening on XM170. Go ahead, James.
Yes, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you.
Good. I teach Bible seminary, Christian Bible seminary, as well as I teach the youth at the Juvenile Justice Center in Bernal. And something that the kids are lacking in both is being home taught. And I just really don't believe that the other caller that called earlier, I just don't believe that he maybe understands the point that it's a lot better to teach a child at three and four in your lap, where you can answer questions and show nurturing, rather than by other 3- and 4-year-old children. And I just, you know, I just think our society is at a loss. We're more interested in the dollar value that's on each of our children's head rather than the moral value that our parents can teach our kids at that age. And I can remember when I was in school that they said most of what you learn is in the kindergarten, you know, that's important in life. And those are how to treat other people and things, and you just don't see that. That's not taught in school. That needs to be taught at home.
Very good point, James. I appreciate your call. You know, I'm thinking about the fact that that you mentioned you work in a juvenile detention center where you have firsthand evidence that would allow you to draw some conclusions about all of this. I'm thinking about the fact that you've got an awful lot of children who are sitting in these institutional settings. And I'll just tell you, you know, when I see children in these settings, it appears to me to be so unnatural and unhelpful. When you compare with the kind of constant nurture and care they need, with the kind of individualized attention they need, and there's just no way to replace a parent. Now, again, as I said, we're not talking today in this program about situations in which this is made necessary, because that's where the conversation has been for a lot of people, and that's still a good conversation, an important conversation for Christians to have. What if you are a single parent? What if you have no parent at home to take care of the children? What kind of setting should you look for? What kind of program should you have them in? That's a different question. The proposals that are coming down now suggest that it should be universal, that children would be in these programs, beginning at age 4 and in some cases at age 3. Now let's just look at how we're defining institutionalization down. We're going from having the grade school to now kindergarten, and kindergarten's now the expectation. Just try to get your kid in the first grade if he hasn't been in kindergarten. And now after that, it's going to be the 4-year class and the 3-year class in preschool. And this is not coming without an agenda. There's an agenda here in terms of people who see this as a way to get jobs. There's an agenda here for those who see it as a way to get children as more or less customers and clients in the system. But I think more than that, the really scary prospect is those who are targeting children with ideas and worldviews, even at these very young ages. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back. In California last year, voters turned down what was known as Proposition 82. It was an initiative pushed by Rob Reiner. You remember him from the program All in the Family. According to Jonathan Miller in this article, it would have hiked taxes on high earners in California by $2.4 billion to fund state-run preschools. It failed by a 3-2 margin. Linda Snell said it was complicated and flexible, and the finances just didn't make sense. But already in California, 66% of the state's 4-year-olds are in preschool. That's already. And the goal was to get 70%. That would have been an increase of 4%. That would have been at a cost of $109,000 per child. Well, that failed. But the idea is catching on. And you can expect to hear a lot about it in the coming presidential campaign. And one of the interesting things is that at least on the Democratic side, everyone is convinced it's a good idea. The issue is how to pay for it. And as a Christian, believing that there's a particular responsibility invested in mom and dad and in the family and in marriage as deals with preschoolers in particular in terms of their education, I find this a very, very daunting prospect. The phone number is 877-893-8255 to join the conversation. Let's go to Syracuse, New York, where Dave's listening on XM170. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I was just calling. I went to the University of Washington, and while I was attending there, they'd actually done a pretty lengthy study that had kind of researched kids going to preschool and things like that, and they really found that there was no long-lasting effects to this. And what they found was that the kids that were actually taught at home by their parents in their formative years actually fared better out in the world. You know, and that just goes to show that God's plan was for a mother and a father to teach their children, not for the government. And this goes back to Hillary Clinton, you know, was saying that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, my God tells me something totally different.
I appreciate that point, Dave, and I do think this is all tied together with a larger worldview context and in terms of children. And, you know, we began the program, I mentioned this decision that came down just this week in Great Britain suggesting that 13-year-olds have a right to be treated for sexually transmitted diseases, get contraceptives, abortions, et cetera, without the knowledge of their parents, because now we're treating 13-year-olds as autonomous adults when it comes to sex, and that's in Great Britain. The logic is also catching on here. And now you have the idea that children should be on their own, away from parents, in these educational settings as early as age 4, and in some cases as early as age 3. Now, Dave, you also mentioned the research, and, you know, people will argue this from both sides. But having looked at the research myself, it's pretty clear that children in middle-class homes, and that's the way so many of these studies are done. They define them by economic level of the household. They do better, clearly, at home rather than in these settings. But the argument is that some from poorer homes where there may be a lack of, the article here calls it parenting skills, or there may be a distractedness in the home, or there may be parents having to work outside the home, that maybe there is some educational gain. But all this says to me that we need to go back and rebuild the family unit. We need to go back and rebuild what's broken, rather than to assume that the state, the government, can become the actor to fix the problem. You know, here is the big point here, and I really think this is a great place for us to focus our discussion in the following moments on this program. Here is the reality. We know that things in terms of, you name the statistic, things can be painted in a very dark and dire picture. just about every week you have some headline screaming that America's kids are getting behind worldwide in math or in political science or whatever. You have all kinds of warnings about children being involved in pathologies of one thing or another. And you can look at these statistics, and it can look pretty dark. The question then comes back to say, how do you fix it? And the reflex posture in our culture is to assume that government can fix this problem. Now, from a Christian perspective, we need to understand that government can fix a good many problems. There are certain assignments given to government for its responsibility. Justice, the administration of justice, national defense. You know, I'm thankful for the interstate highway system. I'm quite willing to tell you that. I'm thankful that we have, at some level, some safety laws in this country having to do with, you know, speed limits and all the rest. I know there are some libertarians who think there ought to be no laws regarding these things, but frankly, I think it's important. I think most of us who go to the hospital are glad that there are some legal protections, you know, put into place, certifications needed for hospitals and all the rest. And so at some level, I think most of us would see the government does have a responsibility here. But the idea that the government can make up for what is lacking in the family is utterly disastrous. And here's the principle. God gave us some basic institutions. The institution of the family, the institution of marriage, is at the very center of civilization. When you begin to break that down, you begin to compromise marriage, you begin to atomize it, break it apart, and start forfeiting its roles, reassigning them elsewhere. And that's exactly what has happened. One of the best scholars on the family, Alan Carlson, talks about how the family has been stripped of its functions. Peter Berger, the sociologist, talking about the same thing. You know, we will take this part of the family's responsibility and we'll outsource it somewhere else. An awful lot has been outsourced to the public schools. In the experience of most American families, education is simply outsourced to the public schools. And what had been a parental responsibility or a responsibility of the parents in cooperation with the church or with the other parents just in the community is now in the hands of a massive governmental infrastructure known as the public school system. But it's not just education. It's many other functions also that have been parceled out from the family. But let's look at the pathologies of our day and let's realize that the instinct of our culture right now is to assume that if something's broken, the government can fix it. But my argument is this, and I believe if you think in terms of the scriptural revelation concerning these things, you will see that you can't assign to the government what God assigns to the family and think you can solve the problem. If you start to break down marriage and family, you're not going to be able to make up for it, no matter how many billions of dollars you throw into a government program, because the government is not going to love your child the way a parent is to love the child. The government is not going to teach your child the way only a parent can teach a child. The government is certainly not going to nurture that child in terms of the worldview that would be important to parents. There is no way that government can give that child the security and the discipline and the love, the nurture, the care that only a parent can give. You can't break down the family and then think some government program can come in behind and clean up the damage. And I think that's exactly what's happening in this proposal. And the fact is, there are going to be an awful lot of Americans for whom this is going to make sense. And it's going to be fascinating to watch this in the 2008 presidential race. It is already a big topic. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. Coast to coast with listeners around the world. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back. I want to mention one final issue to you as we bring this program to a close. It just kind of ties all this together. We were talking about preschoolers for the main portion of the program, but back when we began, we were looking at this decision by medical authorities in Great Britain that 13-year-olds deserve to have treatment for sex problems, sex illnesses, sexually transmitted diseases, abortion, contraception without the knowledge of parents. Now the BBC is reporting out of Buenos Aires that a court in the central Argentine province of Cordoba has for the first time agreed that a sex change operation can be carried out on a minor. In this case, it is a 17-year-old boy. They won't use that word, by the way. They just say a 17-year-old male who wants to be a woman. I think the use of the word male there, by the way, is a journalistic euphemism. It's a way of avoiding the reality. This is a 17-year-old boy who is, I would argue, confused, wants to be a woman. According to this press release from the BBC, a judge has decided that once this young man receives counseling, he can have the operation that will take place in just the next few days. Now, we're talking about a 17-year-old. You talk about a life-changing decision, a decision to change one's gender by surgical manipulation. That's quite a decision. Now, I want to argue that as Christians, we have to be the people who know you really can't change your gender. You know, you can change your expression of the gender. You can have surgery performed on the body. In this case, you know, I sadly have to say I think it should be best classified as mutilation. But you can't change your gender. But it's one thing to say that a person of age has what you might call a right to do this, and I'm not even going to argue that point right now. I don't think that it's an obvious point. But to argue that a 17-year-old ought to have the right, to me, we are getting into scarier and scarier territory all the time. And again, we're treating human beings as autonomous moral individuals. We get to define ourselves. And we first claim that for ourselves as adults, and before you know it, the logic trickles down to our children. And now you have 13-year-olds in Great Britain who have the right to get contraception and abortion and to be treated even for sexually transmitted diseases. Think about this. Your 13-year-old could be sick with a potentially life-threatening disease and you can't be told about it. Or at least there's no requirement that you be allowed to know about it, according to this this decision handed down this week. Now, in Argentina, you have a 17-year-old boy who is going to receive surgery, according to this, in just the next several days, to be transformed, they will claim, into a female, into a woman. Folks, this is the place for intelligent Christian conversation, because while the world is looking at this in terms of sensationalism, arguing about who should pay for the surgery and who should pay for the preschool, someone's got to go back and ask the first questions about how God's glory is to be reflected in this creation and how we as human creatures who are morally responsible are to order our lives in such a way as to bring Him greatest glory. That turns the whole equation upside down. I'll be back with you next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.